Welcome to the West Virginia Soccer Association Beyond the Pitch podcast here on the West Virginia Soccer Association Digital Network. My name is Marcus Cole. Now, before we begin today's program, I wanted to take a moment to remind you that once you've had a chance to check out our show, make sure you give our podcast a 5-star rating and follow us wherever you get your podcast. That helps you stay up to date on all the latest content from us and helps us get the word out to others and let them know that we're providing valuable information for soccer players, coaches, referees, and parents. On the phone with us today is Lisa Cole, pro soccer coach, also director of goalkeeping for United Soccer Coaches and head coach of Antigua and Barbuda women's football team. Lisa, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Lisa, why don't you go ahead and just give our audience a little bit of soccer background about you and your qualifications and experience?
Yeah, I've had a really unique background in some ways. I've been really fortunate to be mentored by some great people along the way. I'm from Washington State originally. I started coaching there. Actually, when I was just in the sixth grade, I started helping out with a little girls team that was training on a field next to where I was training. And I really fell in love with the process of coaching. So I've been fortunate to know I wanted to be a coach for a very long time. And came up through the high school ranks and even through college coaching other teams. So I'm really lucky to get my licensing pretty early in my career and went straight into college coaching after graduating from Pacific Lutheran University and was mentored there by Dr. Colleen Hacker, who some people might know because she's been the sports psychologist for the women's national team, women's ice hockey as well, in the Olympics and World Cup. So I was lucky to be mentored by her. And then throughout my career, I was coaching in the college game and had the opportunity to work with Tony DiCicco through his camps. And he's probably had the greatest influence in my personal coaching journey and was fortunate to get to coach with him after coaching at Ole Miss, UConn, University of Rhode Island as a head coach, and then at Florida State with Mark Kerkorian. So I coached some pretty high level college coaching opportunities, but then went into the professional game and helped Tony start Soccer Plus Connecticut Reds, and then was his assistant for the Breakers, took over for him as the head coach of the Breakers, and then have had stints with Houston Dash and the Washington Spirit in the pro game. And now I've had the opportunity to work with two international teams, Papua New Guinea, when they were trying to prepare for hosting Women's U20 World Cup, and then now with Antigua and Barbuda. So I've been really fortunate to go through youth, college, and the professional game, and now I'm involved in the international game. And I still run a local club in State College, Pennsylvania. I'm the technical director for Center Soccer in the Mountain District Union. So I have great ties to what's happening in the youth game as well, because that's where I started, and I feel it's important that people with opportunities at a higher level also go give back to the game at the youth level.
I agree.
So that's it, quickly.
And that's a wonderful resume. Today, what I want to talk to you about, Lisa, is the female soccer player in a couple of different aspects, since you have such vast experience on both of these subjects. The first one we're going to dive into is playing in college. Obviously, you have a lot of coaching experience in the college ranks. I think that there's a lot of female soccer players out there that want to play at the collegiate level. I think there's a lot of parents that want their daughters to play at the collegiate level. And I think there may be some misconceptions and some myths maybe about playing in college. And I wanted to kind of dive into that a little bit. Talk to us a little bit about what it's like playing at the college level.
Yeah, I think you have to think about the college process as it's an individual process. I think a lot of people get caught up in keeping up with the Joneses and are really worried about whatever other people are doing within their team. Those 4 years are your 4 years, and you're not going to go on that journey with the same players that you're currently tied to and the same families you're tied to. So if you end up in the wrong spot, you're going to be miserable for 4 years. And I think you need to look at it holistically. What do you want your college experience to be like? Do you know what you want to do as far as your career potentially? So there's over 300 Division I experiences, and all those experiences look different because there's the top teams in the country that are vying for a national championship. There's other schools that winning their conference championship is a great accomplishment and celebrated in the same way. And then there's other opportunities where there's less funded universities, but maybe a more academic institution. So being in the Ivy League is different than being in another school. There's great NESCAT schools that are Division III schools that are really academic based, and your college experience will be certainly have a soccer season, but it won't be as demanding as Division I, which turns playing the sport into a little bit of a job, because there's not only your responsibilities on the soccer field, but there's also study hall hours and expectations off the field that you have to put time into. So I think the first thing I'd say to players and to parents is to really have good discussions about what you want to get out of your college experience before you go looking or chasing a soccer scholarship, which aren't always out there, by the way. More academic scholarships are given than soccer scholarships every year.
I agree. I like the idea of finding your own path and finding, because obviously when you go off to college, you've got to be there for 4 years or maybe a little bit more depending upon your situation. But, it's hard to go into a situation. And I've always told my children, my son is a swimmer in college. He's a freshman swimmer. My daughter accepted an offer earlier this year to play in Division II women's soccer. And the one thing that I've always stressed to them is that this is a job on top of what you're doing academically. And I really want to drive that point home to people that it is a lot of work.
Yeah, it really is a full-time job. You're treated kind of as a professional, and soccer will be a majority of what you do while you're there. So if you want to participate, you say, student activities and other things, then you really need to pick a different college opportunity than Division I. And I think at all division, there's a national championship. You're still competing. And I think people lose sight of that, that is Division I or bust. And I think you miss out on some great potential opportunities with that attitude.
What are some of the misconceptions that you've seen over your experience that parents and maybe players have about playing college soccer?
Well, I think the general idea is that they're going to have paid a lot of money for their kids to go and do academy and DA and all these things. And then, they're going to make the national team and they're going to play college sports. And then they're going to go on to play professionally, and there's all this soccer money out there. And the truth is that there isn't enough scholarships for every player that's on the team. It's a different ball game. So most scholarships are not full rides. So they, you may get half ride 1 year, you may get 2/3 the next year, and you may get a full by the time you're a senior potentially, but very rarely do people go to college on a full ride college scholarship. And those players are usually national team players. So if your kid's not at that level, you really need to be focusing on academics, making sure they have a good college resume, and finding other ways for them to afford their college education than traveling around the country with DA or ECNL teams. I think that can be part of their experience, but that's not going to be the reason they go to college.
What if you could give two pieces of advice to a female player that's looking to play soccer in college, what would those two pieces of advice be?
one, to take their time to really, this is, I think, the first major decision a young lady or a young man makes in their life, that maybe they've bought a car, but a lot of times nowadays, I don't think that that's happened yet. But this is the first decision you'll make where it'll have ramifications on the type of person you are and who, whether you're happy going through your college career. Know if you want a big college or a small college. Are you gonna get lost at a big college? Or is that going to add to your experiences? And I really think at the end of the day, it's your journey. It is. It's your, so people can be thrilled and excited for you. Oh, you signed with North Carolina, but you're walking on, you're not going to play until your sophomore or junior year. Are you going to be happy with that experience? Or do you go to a little bit lesser known college and now you're starting, you're an impact player for that college or that university, and there's more value in that. What you're doing every day feels really good to you. And I think we get caught up on the big shiny star. We get this big trophy that says, oh, hey, you're going to this such and such college. That's really cool. But then when you get there, that drive or that motivation to get on the field has to be there. And I think too many times we feel really good about announcing it in the paper, but then what it actually looks like when you arrive is different. Where maybe it's not as big of a hype saying I'm going to go to a Division II school or Division III school. People are like, oh, good job, that's nice. But it's not as big as hype at that moment. But what will happen over the 4 years and how you'll develop as a person and how you'll enjoy your first 2 or 3 years of college will be important and will have more value down the road than that big splash announcement. That everybody's eager and excited about, and that your club coach is excited about because they get to say, I placed 10 players on Division I this year, or whatever it is. So it has to be about what you need, really. I think it has to be a personal journey about what size college, what kind of coach do I want to play for? If that coach isn't there, am I going to be happy being at that university? And what is the experience going to look like? Am I going to be playing here? Am I going to have to be working for playing time? And am I up to those challenges? And no one has those answers but the player that's going to have to go and live in those shoes for those 4 years.
You bring up a really good point in regards to the coach, and that you could, I mean, my son had that situation in that he signed to play for this school and swim for them, and the coach left. Not too long after that. So, and that's the whole thing. Are you going to be comfortable being at that university for those 4 years, or is this something you're going to end up having to transfer somewhere? I mean, there's just a lot of, you know, thought, that careful thought that needs to go in behind a lot of these decisions.
Yeah. And I think, again, it has to be about you and how you feel and having good discussions with the coach, with the, with your parents, and be honest with yourself about what do you really want your college experience to look like, and go out and see different college experiences and talk to the players that are at universities. Ask them hard questions like, do they enjoy playing for the coach? Do they enjoy, what do they do off the field? What are the type of other activities that they're involved in? I think having those conversations with people that are in and around the program will be helpful. What does a typical day look like for a player at X university versus Y university, and what feels right to you? I think it's important.
Switching gears a little bit here, Lisa, I want to move on to an area that has garnished a lot of conversation, especially over social media over the last, I've seen it really start to beef up over this last year, is women coaching soccer. Obviously you have a lot of experience in that area. Where do you think we are as far as a society when it comes to women having coaching positions in the sport?
Yeah, it's funny. I think, soccer's led in a lot of ways, with different types of, advances, but I think we're slow in, putting women out in front. I think we have, good representation within the college game, but not anywhere close to what it could be. And we aren't anywhere close in women's professional soccer or international soccer for some reason, and women taking lead jobs. I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I think part of it has to do with players as well, like not necessarily being used to being coached by men and kind of preferring to be coached by men. I've had professionals when I first took the job with the Boston Breakers come up and say, hey, Lisa, you know, we weren't sure about them hiring you because, you know, we just didn't want to be coached by a woman, but it's been good. You know, like they've been surprised it's been good because their experience has all been with being coached by men. So if we can get more women coaching youth and women having that positive experience, I think that'll help. I think we haven't been able to get women into the positions that they need to be in order to get experience to coach at the next level. I think when Jill Ellis was hired, I think Jill was the only woman that was really prepared for that job. And when Jill retired this year from the national team, I don't know who we prepared or had a pipeline going for who would be next. Regardless of gender, I don't know if we had a good pipeline for who was next. We're lucky with Falco's experience at Seattle and in the professional game. We were able to get a great coach, but a coach without international experience, I think he'll rise to the challenge. I think he'll be good, but are we creating a pathway for people to follow to reach those highest levels in our sport? And I don't think we are at the moment. I don't think we have that pathway for men or women at this point. Where in Germany or other places, they're taking their licenses while they're national team players. They're getting in the youth involved in the youth game at some level, either internationally or with clubs. And I see some of that, but not a direct or clear thought out process to how we get women in those positions.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that of getting the training for coaching while they're playing. And I've actually, my daughter enjoys working with younger players. She's done a number of clinics and camps that she's done as part of her volunteer work within our local community. And I'm trying to encourage her to start the coaching process. And I always thought it would be an easier process while you're playing the game. And obviously, I mean, I went and got my D license, but I was in my early 40s. And at that point, it's, you know, you're participating. And it was so difficult. I think a lot more difficult being older than doing this when you were younger. And I'm trying to convince her to start going through the process, like with the 4v4 certification and things along that lines. What can we do to encourage our female players to start pursuing coaching?
Well, I think that's important, and we're starting to do this even within my club, is asking players to come out that play on our top teams, asking them to come out and help with our younger players. You know, get your high school players out, working with your youth, see if you can run a 4v4 license that they do together. Get a female instructor to come and lead that if you can. I think all those things will turn people on to coaching. It's funny, at the convention, I was able to do a panel this year with Kia McNeil, Ashley Phillips, and Katie Shepherd, who all played for me in Boston. And listening to how they ended up in coaching, one was really adamant she was going to be a coach. The other two didn't. They were doing coaching because it was a way to earn money while they were playing, but they never thought they would be full-time coaches, and they now are. So I think how women come to coaching might be a little bit different. And so we need to create experiences for them to be on the field, be around kids, and fall in love with coaching the same way they fell in love with playing the game.
I think one thing too, that you get in certain situations as a coach where you get players on your team that start displaying those coaching tendencies during their trainings, and whether they are you know, talking with you about certain things and okay, well, what, you know, what if we do this and that kind of thing? How can coaches foster that in their players, if, you know, if those players are kind of coming forward and you see those coaching tendencies in those players, what can coaches do to foster that?
Well, I think you need to foster that environment, maybe give them opportunities to lead warm up or put them in charge of a drill, keeping score, or figuring out picking teams and making even teams. I think those are good opportunities. I tend to always ask questions at halftime and of players, and maybe you put those players in charge. Okay, you're going to give me the first point when we come off. What is something that we need to do better? So giving them opportunities in a controlled environment where they can speak about what they see on the field or feel in the field is really valuable. And I would also encourage you to do that with your goalkeepers. We talk about increasing their opportunity to lead, and you need a good leader. So I think naturally goalkeepers do tend to become coaches, but a lot of times when they're really young or scared to give input or give information that you really need from that position. So I think encouraging them to become coaches is really important as well.
What do you think is the biggest obstacle facing our female players in preventing them from becoming coaches?
I think right now it's just the coaching fraternity. I think I was really, really lucky. I had great mentors, but I also was really determined. Like, I knew I wanted to be a coach. But for somebody that's like, oh, maybe I'll do it, maybe I'll see if it's fun and I'll enjoy it, you go into the youth environment, they hand you a bag of balls and they go, okay, here's your team. Good luck with training. Good luck with practice. Good luck with everything. And I think we need to change that environment. We need to mentor more. Clubs need to mentor more. And little things like that make a big difference in how you feel about yourself, but you come into a predominantly male environment, and what's the talk at your club meetings? How are women portrayed? Are they listened to? Is their opinion asked for? Do you put women only with your younger teams because they're better handling the younger players? I think that's something I really see right now, mentoring a woman, and you know, she's enjoying her job, but she won't get it an ECNL team or a DA team in her club because, oh, she's so good with the 9s and 10s. Well, that's great. She's good with the 9s and 10s. But guess what? She's also a great coach and should be utilized and has some of your best coaching qualifications. She needs to be promoted up and taken more seriously, or you're going to lose her, because just like everybody, that you don't want to be put in a box. You want to be able to expand and continue to grow and learn. And I think right now the simple solution is women have tendencies to be better caretakers and be able to engage younger children at a better environment. So, oh, we'll put them with the youth and then they stay there. They never get to grow out of that. I think that's a challenge a lot of women have. They go into meetings where they're talked about inappropriately, or the conversation is about inappropriate things, and they don't want to be in, we don't want to be in your locker room, and your clubhouse shouldn't be a locker room. You know, it should be a professional space.
Right. Lisa, before we wrap things up, if there's a young female soccer player out there listening to this podcast right now, and she's thought, you know, I like working with players. I like showing them the things that I've learned, and probably more importantly, I want to give back to the game. What's that one piece of advice that you would give that player to encourage them to become a coach?
Yeah, I think coaches, similar to teachers, and a little bit more so with coaches, because you're teaching something that all the players are opting into. They love the sport, so they're coming because they want to be there. I think the impact you are going to be able to have on young girls' lives or young boys' lives is tremendous, and that it won't always be easy. So find a network that can help you through things. The Unite Soccer Coaches has a women's advocacy group. We're here to help mentor young coaches and find opportunities for you. So I think figure out one or two people in your area that you feel do a good job, male or women. My biggest advocates, again, was Tony DiCicco, and a great man who have advocated for women coaches. Find someone in your area that's going to advocate for you and put you in the right environment. And if you end up in the wrong environment, it's not quite perfect, don't leave the game, just leave that environment. You know, find a club that matches your values or is going to support you the way that you should be supported. I think women get out because they have a bad experience, and I think everybody has a bad experience. That doesn't mean you leave or quit. It just means you need to move on to the right environment where you can succeed.
Lisa, you're a wonderful follow on social media, on Twitter. How can people find you?
Yeah, I have a website, just lisacole.com. I put up things about what I'm doing there. I'm obviously on Twitter, lcole22, and on Facebook now, especially being on the island a ton. They use Facebook a bunch more. So they can reach me there, any of those places. And if somebody is out there that wants to get into coaching, they should reach out because I can put them in contact with the right people in their area to help mentor and provide guidance for them.
Wonderful. Lisa, thank you so much for being on our program today and providing some valuable information to our young female soccer players.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the West Virginia Soccer Association Beyond the Pitch podcast here on the West Virginia Soccer Association Digital Network. Now that you've heard our show, make sure you give our podcast a 5-star rating and follow us wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back next Thursday with another episode, so we hope to see you next week. Take care.